Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.
This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
This is the Game Podcast Bonus, and I'm joined by Rory Smith, who's the latest addition to our football crew at The Times. And Rory, whenever you meet people who are in our line of work, I'm kind of saying, like, we're all extremely fortunate, I think, to be doing this job. But I'd like to know, when you were a kid, what did you want to do? And the reason I ask this is our leader, Ollie Kay, when he was a child, he was very clear on what he wanted to do. He ran massive simulations. He designed this football board game for the 1986 World Cup, and he still kept meticulous statistics of every team and stuff like that. And were you also sort of football sick, or did you have a slightly like Ollie and myself, like we were, or did you have a slightly healthier outlook?
I suspect probably more on the football sick side than the healthy outlook side. I mean, I did do other things as a child. I'm not quite that Kerouacian level of obsessiveness that Ollie can put up. But no, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a footballer. I think that's probably the one thing that unites all football journalists, that they all wanted to be footballers. And then you realise you can't because you're rubbish. So you end up sort of looking for something else to do in the game. And I don't know, it's always been there's no sort of fascinating backstory about when I decided.
Well, how old were you when you realised you would never make it as a professional footballer?
24, 25. Finally gave up on the dream. No, I don't know, I guess you work it out at sort of 12, 11, 12, 13 probably nowadays. And I don't know, but football always fascinated me. European football, I remember sort of watching in the days when European football was relatively hard to watch, doing as much as you could to sort of absorb everything about it, just reading constant magazines, 90 Minutes, which came out on a Tuesday, I think, used to run down to the newsagents for, and long since departed, 90 Minutes, unfortunately. But it was just something that surrounded me, and yeah, I guess that level of detail, knowing the players, knowing the names of the players, knowing what was good about the players and what was bad about the players, just fascinated me. One of the most embarrassing things I ever did was go on a Radio 5 Live phone-in about Eastern European football to ask a question about Georgian football at the age of 12. I think that probably sums up my childhood.
All right, now just to get this in context, you're obviously younger than Ollie and me, so you would, when you were 12 years old, you're not talking about sort of, Stalinist Russia, you're talking about, or even... Was it, you were talking about 1990s, yes?
It was, it's 94, so it'd be, maybe 13, it would be when King Clancy had signed for Man City. And I was interested in the fact that there were these new borders opening up. Savo Milosevic was at Villa, I think, and just, I guess it's the exoticism of it that fascinates you. My geography is still dictated. When I meet someone from abroad, I ask where they're from, knowing that I'll probably have heard of the city because of the football team, not because I have this sort of globe in my head. And those names were really evocative. It was a time when, I don't want to sort of over-romanticise it, but the world was opening up a little bit and you could go to these places suddenly, and your English teams were back in Europe. I remember English teams going back into Europe after the Heysel ban, and it just seemed so sort of glamorous, and Serie A was full of all these sort of evocative names, and it was just that aspect of it. Far more than, I supported an English club, but far more than that aspect of it fascinated me, and I wanted to travel and see how it was different. And I do believe now that football is a great sort of cultural diviner, almost. You can tell a lot about a country through its football.
One of the it's interesting you made that point. You can tell a lot about country-based football because this is one of those things that I've, well, a lot of people have written books about, that how football reflects sort of a national character and so on. And by the same token, there are some people like myself who actually think that it's not the football itself that reflects a national character. It's perhaps the way the fans and the people of the country react to it. But in this world where, you know, it's not as homogenous as it once was. There are so many influences. There's access to so much information. There are so many foreign players pretty much in every league, foreign managers. We can watch football from other countries. Do you think that's still the case? I mean, do you think your children, should you ever procreate, might grow up in a world where they just wouldn't understand why French football would be different from Slovakian football?
You said procreate like it would be some sort of dystopian prospect for the planet, which I thank you for. I think there will always be those differences, and there will always be those sort of weird cultural tropes that each country adopts in its football for no apparent reason. Why should the Spanish have this tradition of tiki-taka? This sort of false tradition of tiki-taka? What exactly is it about Spanish character that means that it kind of works there and it fits there? But the one thing that I do think that has been lost with the homogenisation of the game is the glamour. When I was a kid, Red Star Belgrade and Steaua Bucharest were these incredibly sort of powerful, potent names, and you. Red Star was skillful, and the side of Prozanetsky and Stojkovic and Panchev, and you know they were skillful. They were sort of these dark, swarthy magicians on the ball. But the Champions League and the
Brzezinski thanks you, by the way, for calling him swarthy.
He's sort of the albino swarthy one. The Champions League and the way the game's gone has removed that, and now that. I don't know, a lot of the mystery has gone out of football, and I think that's a real shame. I think that's something we've lost. It still exists maybe in South America to an extent, but we see so much football now that there is no mystery anymore. And also, I mean, the Champions League and the wealth in the Western European game has... I mean, it's just destroyed the great names of Eastern Europe, and I think that's a real shame. I mean, Dinamo Tbilisi, Liverpool fans still talk about Dinamo Tbilisi in 1981 as being the hardest game the club's ever played, the toughest opponents that, you know, that great side faced. I mean, that's unimaginable now. Welsh sides beat Dinamo Tbilisi in the first qualifying round of the UEFA Cup, and that's something that does sadden me.
Well, they'll just have to find their own Eastern European oligarch there, and all will be well. But what strikes me about what you said is, growing up, I had the same thing. I spent some time in Japan, and I remember reading World Soccer and Brian Glanville. And the reality is, Glanville could have told me that Borussia Mönchengladbach had a refrigerator playing up front and a Martian playing in goal, and I would have likely believed it because there was no access, there was no sort of, a way to sort of verify or form your own opinion about it. Or to put it, I guess, historically, a very small group of journalists had access to the primary sources. Today, thanks to the web and satellite television and so on, yeah, we may have lost some of the mystery and romance, but everybody has access to the primary sources. Everybody can watch a match unmediated just as the journalist does. And apart from maybe a little bit of access to players and managers and so on, we're all on a level playing field.
Oh yeah, the internet, it's trite to say it, but the internet's massively changed the way that things are reported and the way that we have to behave as journalists, I think, because even in my short time, 6 or 7 years reporting on football, it's the knowledge of fans about Leeds, incredibly sort of diverse and kind of specialist and niche is insane. You'll link, a club to a player in the Belgian second division. You'll get someone on Twitter saying, well, actually, he's not a right winger. He prefers to play, as a Trequartista. And that's fantastic. That I suppose it's the global village, isn't it, almost, that it's brought people together and people can now watch Belgian. If you want to watch Belgian football, you can watch Belgian football, until your heart is satiated. At the same time, yeah, it makes it harder, I guess, for the journalists to find their role in society, and you have to have that ability to analyse and to construct an argument and construct a narrative around football. That's what football is largely. It's a narrative based around a sort of arbitrary 90 minutes. And I guess that's what the role is nowadays. And I still think that to an extent, having access to the managers and players, although it's increasingly fleeting, does inform your your decision making, your opinion forming much more than simply sitting and watching football matches. I think knowing the contact that you have, again, the increasingly fleeting contact that you have with people within clubs and within the sport, the decision makers, means you can analyse things in a slightly different way, which is why maybe, you know, people in the media have curious sympathies with people that fans maybe don't sympathise with, but it's because either they give us information or because you can sort of see things from a slightly different way.
Right, final question, the standard sort of dinner party question. Three footballing figures, alive or dead, that would make sort of your perfect football chat related evening.
I think I probably have to have.
You can amend this. We can ask you this again in 6 months' time. So consider this a first effort.
He maybe wouldn't make great conversation, but Juan Riquelme would have to be there. It was my favourite player, and as a man who I'd quite like to ask how he can sort of dominate space in the way that he does.
You could just ask the same question to Paolo Di Canio, he'd give you a better answer, but go ahead.
Possibly, but his politics would make him a sort of disagreeable companion, I think. A liberal leaning dinner party. That might be unfair on Paolo, I'm not sure. Who else? That's a very good question. Sacchi, possibly, is the father of modern sort of tactical thinking. Marcello Bielsa, without a shadow of a doubt.
There you go. Bielsa, Sacchi, and Riquelme. I'd sign up for the pay-per-view just to see hear the interplay between Bielsa and Riquelme and myself. Rory, thank you so much, and welcome to the Times.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan, and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts, and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.